Good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta. Abortion is the morally defining issue of this generation because it deals with the very definition of who gets to be called human. Today, of course, we spend a good deal of time talking about the problem, the slaughter of abortion in our country. It, of course, is not only the shedding of innocent blood, it's also a deeply philosophical problem. It has to do with who we the people are. Today is the March for Life, commemorating 47 years of the Roe v. Wade regime, and we're going to be focusing in, talking with people there at the march. Also, we will be listening to President Trump's address to the March for Life, really a historic occasion, the first American president to actually show up and deliver an address at the March for Life. It hasn't been done by President Reagan or either of the Bushes, certainly not by President Clinton or President Obama. But Donald Trump is the one who first president to actually show up and address the people. It was a very strong message, I should say, and that's one reason we're going to be airing it in its entirety in the second hour of today's program. Also coming up today, this has been the week of prayer for Christian unity, and I'm going to be talking with Father Jürgen Lias, who will tell us about Father Paul Watson or Father Paul of Greymoor, who is really the linchpin to this whole week of prayer for Christian unity. It's a marvelous history. We'll also talk with Ann Hendershot, who will talk about those black Hebrew Israelites who were there at the March for Life last year and had so much to do with the Covington Catholic High School story. So stay with me. First, though, let's get to today's headlines.
Thanks, Al. Good afternoon, everyone. This is your Ave Maria Radio News for Friday, January 24th. It's the Feast of St. Francis de Sales. Today's news is brought to you by the Ave Maria Family of Funds at AveMariaFunds.com. Today, President Trump became the first president to address the March for Life live and in person.
We're here for a very simple reason, to defend the right of every child, born and unborn, to fulfill their God-given potential.
Trump told the crowd at the 47th annual march that he's appointed judges who will protect the lives of the unborn. We'll air the entire speech next hour. Vice President Mike Pence discussing abortion, Venezuela, and displaced religious minorities in the Middle East during a meeting with Pope Francis at the Vatican. The two men exchanged gifts in the meeting that took place as Pence was returning from a Holocaust memorial in Jerusalem. They also spoke about the March for Life. The Islamic State West Africa province in offshoot of the Boko Haram terrorist group has released a video showing the execution of a 22-year-old Christian student from Nigeria by a minor. Prior to shooting him, the child, who began by chanting in Arabic, claims that the execution is revenge for bloodshed, allegedly by Christians, and says the executions will not stop. It's the second video this week to feature Nigerian Islamic terrorist groups executing Christian captives. Investigators believe two people killed in a massive Southeast Texas plant explosion worked at the facility.
Been in contact with families. We've made it, we told them that we can't say 100% it's their loved ones, but, you know, you connect the dots, the probability is high, very high that it's them.
Houston Police Chief Art Acevedo told reporters this afternoon that there's a possibility of more victims, but it's still being sorted out. Watson Grinding and Manufacturing on Gessner near Clay blew up early this morning, and the cause is still under investigation. The blast damaged hundreds of houses. I'm Steve Clark, Ave Maria Radio News.
Good afternoon, I'm Al Cresta. On this day of the March for Life, it's good to look at different ways that pro-lifers are helping to spread their message of love and hope. One of our sponsors is Real Estate for Life, and its executive David Tyson is joining us right now to talk a little bit about how he's integrating his pro-life perspective into the world of business. David, good to have you with me.
Thanks, Al. Glad to be with you.
Talk to me a little bit about the decision to actually name your business Real Estate for Life.
Yes, indeed. I had 12 years ago a conversation with a pro-life business person in Jackson, Michigan, who had a construction company, a small group, Steve Kwoski, and he was very active in pro-life, and that's actually was the inspiration for us, and we were originally going to call ourselves Pro-Life Real Estate, and indeed something as simple as my daughter, who is trained in journalism, said, I think you should call it Real Estate for Life. Huh. And that worked out very well because we not only support the pro-life, but also the full spectrum of life, Evangelium Vitae, euthanasia, fighting those types of things.
Sure.
And that's how the name came to be.
How has that worked for you in the marketplace? Do you find people, do they have any objections to you naming yourself? Do they think that you're putting activism ahead of business?
Actually, no. The supporters that contact us, for example, from Ave Maria, they're steeped in their life, yeah. Their faith life, and they want to find a way to affiliate with other faith-based, in our case, real estate agents.
Right.
We have 1,000 of those worldwide in our system. And then at the end of the day, also, the fact that we donate over $100,000 to pro-life groups and other faith-based organizations through our efforts, they want to be part of that.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. Again, the commitments run deep. Pro-life people don't just have an opinion. They want to make sure that their life is reflecting these pro-life priorities. So how do you, when you donate $100,000 to pro-life activities, is that in the form of a tithe, or how does that work?
Well, I would say that it's a strong tithe. For example, if we receive a referral check from an agent who's closed a sale, and no, let's just say the referral check is $1,000.
Sure.
Once we've received that through our business, then we transfer it to our nonprofit and make the distribution, and we send $800 out.
Yes.
So we donate 80% of the gross amount of the check that comes in.
Oh.
And we send that out. So we have a good volume that allows us to do that.
So you set up a nonprofit to handle this. So that makes sense.
Correct. Yes, a C corporation nonprofit is Real Estate for Life. The business end is simply our brokerage, residential property consultants, which is simply a Michigan-based brokerage. But because I'm a broker, I can receive referral checks from other brokers, not only in other states but in other countries.
Yeah. Have you had anybody complain to you about being Real Estate for Life?
Actually, strangely enough, we've never had a single complaint. 400 supporters a year over a 10-year plus period, it's really astounding.
That actually surprises me. I would have thought you'd have at least a few voices who would have complained or tried to turn this into a political Donnybrook, but. I'm glad to hear that. I would imagine then. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No. I was going to say they're already tuned into Human Life International, Students for Life, Ave Maria Radio.
Mm-hmm.
They're already tuned into these particular faith organizations, and that's nobody hears about us on a bulletin board or even a church paper.
Yeah.
They have to be narrowly targeted to groups like that.
Gotcha. Okay. So how long have you been doing this?
I commenced in 2008 was the first organization of any structure. It took us about 1 year to get all of the parts assembled. Fortunately, we have some business acumen, and so we knew to take and make sure that everything was well structured.
Sure.
And so it launched in 2009.
Okay. So very good. Now, there's. Do you have any, are there any plans in the future to in any way alter what you're doing?
Boy, that's a great question, Al. We have had a number of people ask us to bring in other types of professionals, attorneys, title companies, appraisers, home inspectors, and we decided very early that we needed to stay narrowly focused
mm-hmm.
on what we do best, and that we're not able to assemble those types of affinity groups into our system. And so it's a bit sad that we can't, but it also helps us from being diffused.
Well, this is one of the things that I think successful business people realize they have to stay focused on what they do best. And there's always the problem of mission creep, where you end up trying to do too much, and it undermines your central commitments. So it makes sense to me that you'd stay focused in real estate. Now, how many people work with you on this in your network or your organization?
Well, it only because of technology, we only need a handful of people. We have a commercial division, and that's headed up by, these initials wouldn't mean anything, but a CCIM is the highest level of designation.
Mm-hmm.
So the commercial division is a little bit separate, and they have support staff, and then I have some support staff. I take in all the residential customers, so anyone inquiring, which starts with me, and then we rely upon the agent base. And this was a bit of serendipity. In building our agent base, as it turned out, 70% of the agents that are in our system called us first. They heard about it on things like Ave Maria.
Beautiful.
And American Life League and so on.
Yeah.
And they wanted to be part of it. And so that was a blessing.
That's great. So you've got the initiative coming from those people to begin with. So that's got to be a great sign, a signal to you that these are people that you want to work with. So that's beautiful. How do people get in touch?
Go ahead. I was going to say, one of the nice things is the feedback from the agents. How often I hear them talking about your supporters and other pro-life groups.
Yeah.
And just saying it was such a delight to work with this family, and it helps inspire my faith life to a higher level. Mm. So, sorry to interrupt you. But
No, it's fine.
It's another benefit that's so blessed.
I think that's tremendous. Now, how can people get in touch with you and learn more of what you're doing?
The easiest way is the website, and, you know, it's realestateforlife.org. If you just Google pro-life realtor or Catholic realtor, will be the first organic hit on page one.
Right.
There's probably a couple of ads from Zillow or something in front of us, but paid ads. But we're the first organic hit. And I'd say 15% of the customers find us simply by surfing the web and putting in phrases like that.
Beautiful. Okay. Well, Dave, thanks so much. David Tyson is Executive Director of Real Estate for Life. And let's talk again, David, okay?
Well, Al, you have a blessed day, and thank you very much for calling.
Yeah. Again, David Tyson is Executive Director of Real Estate for Life. Be easy to get to, realestateforlife.org. Let me give you another example of some local people who are taking advantage of the March for Life. I'm talking to John Dijak, who is president of Father Gabriel Richard High School in Ann Arbor, Michigan. They've taken down busloads of high school students. And, John, it's good to have you here.
Thanks a lot, Al. It is packed. It's loud. So if we are, I ask for your patience if we if we miss each other on some questions.
Well, let's tell me a little bit about what you did at Father Gabriel Richard High School to prepare students to head on down there to the March for Life.
Sure. I think it's actually our largest extracurricular is the pro-life clubs. And we're very privileged to have not only Barb Brown as a rock who has spearheaded that effort for nearly 40 years.
And Barb is great.
But also Dr. Monica Miller, well known to your audience, as one of our theology teachers. So she's down here, Barb's down here, and a number of teachers, et cetera. But our students meet monthly, and this is the highlight of their year in terms of the pro-life group. We have three buses down here. And we've prepared in any number of ways. It's really a pilgrimage. And obviously prayer and rosary on the way down, on the way back, mass this morning. And so, you know, an all-night odyssey with the kids is a pilgrimage unto itself.
Yes, I'm sure that's true. So are your students there prepared to speak about their commitment to life?
Yes. I've got with me Ian Sood, who is a current senior, just got into University of Michigan, happy to report. He is here to talk about his experience of the 4 years being a member of the Pro-Life Club, in particular this this event and what it means for all of our students, especially this year, too, with the president, first time sitting president being actually physically present back in March. So,
yes, yes.
Would you like me to turn it over to him?
Let me talk to Ian. Right. Ian, good to have you here. Thanks.
Hey, how are you? Sorry, it's a little hard to hear.
Okay, I'm sure it's loud there. What is the environment like?
It is jam-packed right now. There's thousands of people trying to get in because, as you probably heard, the president's coming to this rally today.
Right.
There's thousands of people waiting in line, waiting to get in.
We're recording this earlier in the day, so have you heard the president speak yet?
We have not yet. We're still waiting.
Okay. Okay, so he'll be there. Tell me about traveling down there with your classmates. What kind of experience is that like?
This was my first year actually going on the bus with our grade. We got on, we started off by praying the rosary together. It was a good way to start off the trip right through our faith. This was just a bonding experience the whole way because we're with them for pretty much 8 hours, so it was just a great way to just hang out with everyone.
Yeah, yeah. What do you hope to accomplish when you attend something like this?
Look, what I can hope to accomplish is any action I can take that could at least save at least one child's life.
Yeah.
Then it's all worth it. Everything we do here is worth it. So coming down here is really a way to put my faith into action. So everything I do, I'm doing it for the Lord and for each person.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let me thank you, Ian, for being with me. It's a great pleasure to have talked with you today.
Yep, thank you.
Thank you so much. Ian Seward and John Dijak from Father Gabriel Richard High School, further examples, along with Dave Tyson of Real Estate for Life, of what local people are doing to demonstrate their commitment to life.
Cresta in the Afternoon is underwritten by the following nonprofit organization, Real Estate for Life. Buying or selling your home or business property? Real Estate for Life can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 80% of the referral check to Ave Maria Radio and Students for Life. More information at realestateforlife.org or 877-LIFE-US1. That's realestateforlife.org.
It took two stressful years to settle my mother's disorganized estate. We wanted to save our children the headaches created by poor estate planning. We called Jason Negri.
Jason is an estate planning attorney with expertise on end-of-life issues from a Catholic perspective.
He prepared all our documents, and he addressed our concerns regarding end-of-life medical care. We were highly satisfied with the personal service we received from Jason.
Visit jasonnegri.com today. That's jasonnegri.com.
Solidarity HealthShare began out of the Christian tradition of neighbor helping neighbor. They're a nonprofit medical cost-sharing ministry in which their members share in each other's eligible medical expenses. Solidarity HealthShare is not insurance, but rather an alternative way to pay for medical costs that adheres to the teachings of the Catholic Church. They'll never share in a medical care that goes against their values and morals, such as abortion, contraception, and sterilization. More information available at SolidarityHealthShare.org or at 844-313-4999.
Hi, everybody. Dr. Ray here. My newest book, Raising Upright Kids in an Upside-Down World, help you stand strong against the culture no longer on your side to identify all of the forces trying to misshape your child. To help you stand strong against those forces, to resist them, to recognize them so you can raise the kind of kid you wish to raise. You can get the new book at AveMariaRadio.net. That is AveMariaRadio.net.
Happy New Year and welcome to a new decade. It's 2020. What better way to start it off than with a new Ram truck? Hi, I'm Dan Hall from Pinckney Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram. And during our Start Something New sale going on now, you can lease a new Ram Crew Cab 4x4 for as low as $239 a month. This is Motor Trend's Truck of the Year 2 years in a row. We have 10 acres loaded with inventory for you to pick your next new truck. Only at Pinckney Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram or visit us online at PinckneyChrysler.com.
Are you tired of investing in the culture of death? Would you like your investments to be in line with the Catholic Church? Would you like an advisor who is a fiduciary and who understands retirement issues while sharing and respecting your Catholic beliefs? Contact Joseph Vitale at American Retirement Advisors at 855-756-5700, helping you preserve your retirement while preserving your beliefs and values. Call Joe at 855-756-5700.
Hello, this is Steve Ray, and I'd like to invite you to an event that takes place only once every 10 years, the Oberammergau Passion Play in Germany. But we have a whole pilgrimage built around it, going through Munich, even going to see Dachau, going to go through Switzerland and down into northern Italy to Milan. This is only once every 10 years. It's going to be great. We already have reservations. We would like you to join us.
To learn more about your Ave Maria radio trip, go to AveMariaRadio.net and find the pilgrimage link.
You don't think it'll happen to you twice. First, it was a fire. My agent was right there and helped me rebuild. Then the tornado destroyed everything again. Both times, my independent agent and auto owners took care of me like someone takes care of family.
For whatever lies ahead, we're always there. Auto Owners Insurance.
For your no-obligation quote, please call Choice Insurance at 734-641-4200.
Good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta, and this week is the week of prayer for Christian unity. And like a lot of things, we've probably observed it or heard about it for years and never really wondered how, in fact, it came to be part of our calendar. With me right now to talk about it is Father Jürgen Lias, Episcopal priest for 40 years. He became a Catholic in 2012, was ordained to the Catholic priesthood in 2013, the former pastor of the community of St. Gregory the Great. And Father, it's good to have you with me. Thanks.
Wonderful to be here, Al. Good to be on your show.
How'd the ball get rolling on this? How far back does it go?
Well, interesting enough, even though it's, you know, something that has been sponsored by the Catholic Church and was by Pope, I think it was Benedict the 15th, actually, mm-hmm. who established the week, but it was actually started by an Episcopal priest from New York named Father Paul Watson, who was in the Episcopal priest, but he was part of a movement and a wing, you might call it, of Anglican Church, or Episcopal, as we call it in this country, called Anglo-Catholicism.
Mm-hmm.
And the roots of Anglo-Catholicism go back to a movement that started in the 1830s in England, and actually in Oxford, at the University of Oxford, called the Oxford Movement originally, started by none other than one of our most recent saints in the church, John Henry Newman.
Right.
And it was a movement of Anglican divines in Oxford, and their vision was for the Anglican Church both to become more Catholic in its sensibilities and liturgy and theology and sacramental life, and also to work diligently for the reunification of the Anglican Church with the Roman Catholic Church. That was very much the impetus of Newman and some of those early other, we call them Anglican, Anglo-Catholic fathers, Pusey, Keble, these are some of the names of these wonderful great men. Mm-hmm. And that movement does spread in England to much controversy. Not only was it opposed by much of the Church of England, a lot of these leaders were even thrown in prison because they were supposedly practicing popery.
Yeah.
And so they were a persecuted minority in the church, but they were faithful in their vision. And that movement also came to the United States in the 1840s. Matter of fact, one of the times in my own life, I was a rector of a priest at a church in Boston called Church of the Advent, which was an Anglo-Catholic church, which had been started to promulgate the principles of the Oxford movement. And it was a very significant part of my own journey from Anglicanism into the Catholic Church later. But Paul Watson was one of these men who really was committed to this movement. And among the things that grew out of the Anglo-Catholic movement was not only a renewal of liturgy and theology, the establishment of the Mass, the restoration of confession, a lot of the things that we accept as normative Catholicism, but had been lost in the Anglican Church. They started restoring these things to the Anglican Church.
Mm-hmm.
And among the things they started, interesting enough, were religious orders. You know, Henry VIII had abolished all the religious orders in England
right.
in the 1500s, and they began to start communities of religious orders and of monks and nuns in England. And it was Paul Watson who started had a vision to start a community in upstate New York. It eventually is established in a town called Greymore, which is up the Hudson, about maybe an hour and a half north of New York City. And not only did he start a men's community, there was a wonderful woman who came along who had a similar vision, also an Episcopalian, Sister Lorena, who started a women's community. And they began this two side-by-side communities of Franciscan. They call themselves the Society of the Atonement and the Friars of the Atonement. And one of their primary charisms was unity, their church unity. And praying especially for the reunification of the Anglican Church with the Catholic Church. And as part of that vision, he established the idea of a week for prayer for Christian unity. He spaced it in the calendar, in those days calendars changed, so it doesn't quite work as well as it did originally, between the Feast of St. Peter, which is was used to be in the old calendar, January the 18th, and the Feast of St. Paul,
which is
January 25th. And not only was it these two great apostles that are the foundation of the church, but also, in a way, Peter represented, you might say, the Catholic Church, in a certain sense, the Petrine office. And Paul, of course, seems to be the favorite apostle for most Protestants.
Right.
And he saw that as a symbolic thing to pray for a week founded by these two great saints for the unification, reunification of the church.
And was he successful at installing that among Episcopalians in the United States or the Anglican Worldwide Communion?
Limited success, I would say, and this was actually established in the late 1800s. I think it was somewhere around 1898 or something like that. I'm not quite sure. I'm on top of the date.
Sure.
But what was particularly interesting, though, was the communities that he was in charge of, both the men's community and Sister Lorena, who was the Mother Superior of the women's community of the Franciscans, they began to discern a call among themselves to actually join the Catholic Church. And it was kind of interesting. I remember reading in the biography of Paul Watson, somewhere in the late 1800s, Leo the 13th, who was Pope at the time, declared Anglican orders absolutely null and utterly void in a bull that he proclaimed.
Yeah.
And that deeply distressed Father Watson, because he was deeply committed to, he really believed, even though he was an Anglican, that there was a primacy of the Pope that was appropriate and right. And so he was greatly distressed, and it caused him great consternation and prayer about his own religious orders or his own priesthood. He was a very devout and holy priest, a profoundly rich man of God.
At that time, I want to make sure I've got this straight. At that time, they still retained a plausible idea that there were three great streams of ancient Christianity: the Anglican, the Orthodox, and the Catholic. Right.
That's right, and particularly the Anglo-Catholics maintained that they did have apostolic succession.
Right. That's right.
They did have. And their orders were valid, and they saw themselves not as not Catholic. They didn't see themselves as Protestant.
Right.
I remember even as a boy, when I was a young boy, I had grown up in a very Irish Catholic neighborhood, and I was, you know, very aware of being a Protestant, and all the Catholic kids in the neighborhood. It wasn't an easy time growing up in a majority Irish Catholic neighborhood being a Protestant. I won't say more than that. Nonetheless, I had a new priest come to my church who was an Anglo-Catholic. And I'll never forget, I was like 12 years old and I was at confirmation class. And he said, "Now look it, I want you to know we Episcopalians are not Protestant. We are Catholics too, except we're not Roman Catholics.
We're
Anglican Catholics." And he believed and taught that we were a legitimate part of the total Catholic Church, like the Eastern Orthodox, like the Roman Catholic Church. And that there are still many Anglicans who still maintain that. But the bull that Leo just stressed really troubled Paul, and he went to prayer, and he finally, really out of a sense of obedience, to the Pope in, mm-hmm. in a strange kind of way. This invited his community and Sister Lorena, the women's community, to come into the Catholic Church, and they petitioned Rome to be received as religious communities into the Catholic Church. The first Protestant religious communities, although they wouldn't have called themselves Protestant, but in retrospect, we would, who came back into the Catholic Church. It was quite a remarkable and wonderful event, and it was all promulgated again on this desire for unity. That, you know, the name of the community, Society of Atonement, was a vision that Paul had one time when he was praying. He was seeking the scriptures, and he came upon a verse in Romans 5:11, which spoke about the atonement. But usually when we think of atonement, we think about the death of Christ, the blood of Christ, the sacrificial atonement. But he saw the word atonement, not atonement, as the way we usually think of it. He says he saw it as at-one-ment,
yes,
and unity. And so he, that idea of the unity of the church, and that this unity, said, so grieved him. And he said it was such a scandal to the world, that the disunity of the church. And so right from the beginning, that community is committed to atonement, at one-ment with God and one-ment with unity in the church. And out of that came his week of prayer for Christian unity. And then it was after he became a Catholic that the Pope heard of this movement that he had started and blessed it and made it a part of the universal practice of the church, which it has been since, I think that was like 1916 or something like that. I forget exactly the dates.
Mm-hmm.
He was quite a prophetic man, way ahead of his time.
Right. That's what I was going to say. I mean, this is really remarkable. He precedes the some of the big moments in among the Protestant churches.
That's right. The ecumenical movement grew out of the missionary movement, but that wasn't really till the beginning of the 20th century.
Right.
In Scotland and things like that, and the World Council of Churches and all the beginnings of all that thing, the Protestant ecumenic movement. He was way ahead of that, a real visionary. And, of course, those of us like myself who have come into the Catholic Church also see him as kind of our patron saint. By the way, he is now up for canonization. His papers have gone to Rome, and we hope that he will be declared a saint at some point. He is declared a servant of God. And it is quite a wonderful history, because a lot of other things he did besides that. Another thing he developed was a thing called St. Christopher's Inn, which was the first ministry to homeless men. And these men would come from the streets of New York up the Hudson to live in this house there. And it was the first kind of really wise and astute treatment, particularly with things like alcoholism. People didn't understand alcoholism the way we do now.
Yeah.
And he was quite just a very, as part of his Franciscan spirituality, that just to really touch and reach out to the poor and the marginalized and the homeless.
Well, it's a remarkable ministry that he had, and I'm delighted that you were able to take the time to help us, initiate us a little bit into his life, and I hope we can call on you again to go in this
even
greater depth. Okay?
My privilege.
Thank you, Father.
All right. God bless. May the church be one.
Father Jürgen Leos is the former pastor of the community of St. Gregory the Great, was an Episcopal priest for 40 years, became a Catholic in 2012, ordained a Catholic priest in 2013, talking about Father Paul of Greymoor, Father Paul Watson, who was responsible for this week of prayer for Christian unity.
Ann Arbor Smiles welcomes Dr. Patrick DiDonato and Dr. Abigail Walker to their team. Patrick is a parishioner of St. Thomas the Apostle in Ann Arbor, and Abigail is a pediatric dentist with openings available without a wait. Learn more about them at AnnArborSmiles.com. The team at Ann Arbor Smiles offers nearly every specialty in two convenient locations, including cosmetic dentistry, braces and Invisalign, and even sleep apnea. Ann Arbor Smiles provides care for the entire family. Visit AnnArborSmiles.com.
When I heard other business owners say they finally found someone in the credit card industry they can trust, I wondered how he could help me. So when Mark from Schisler CPC offered to show me where all the money goes for credit card processing with a free analysis of my business, I jumped on it. He reviewed how the industry works, where we could save, and offered a no-contract guarantee on savings and excellent customer service. I'm saving thousands of dollars a year. Schisler CPC. Trust in them.
More information available on the Ave Maria website under Sponsor Business Directory.
Beacon Skin and Surgeries is a comprehensive dermatology center on the border of Troy and Rochester Hills, south of M59, and in Dearborn, west of Telegraph. Beacon Skin and Surgeries perform full skin exams and focus on the diagnosis and treatment of all types of skin cancer and precancerous lesions. All are board-certified dermatologists and fellowship-trained surgeons. Call 248-852-1900. Beacon Skin and Surgeries, a beacon for patient care. 248-852-1900.
Your faith is important to you. You've carried it with you through the years, growing closer to God every day. You can't imagine life without your faith, and Henry Ford Village wouldn't have it any other way. Henry Ford Village Senior Living Community in Dearborn features a large, beautiful chapel with Sunday Mass each week, a 24/7 tabernacle, and a full-time Catholic minister on staff. Close to church, closer to faith, and it's only the beginning. Call 877-796-3458 to schedule your personalized Henry Ford Village visit today.
Come and see what the Lord is doing at Huron Valley Catholic School during their winter open house on Sunday, January 26th from 1 to 3 p.m. Bishop Boyer said Huron Valley Catholic School continues to shine as a wonderful example of excellent academics and strong Catholic environment. Discover their 10 anchors, Christ-centered classrooms, St. John Bosco education philosophy, and parent-run board. Ask about financial aid. Visit hvcatholicschool.org. That's hvcatholicschool.org.
This program is brought to you in part by Charity Mobile, a proud partner of Ave Maria Radio for over 10 years. Charity Mobile is the pro-life cell phone company and has sent nearly $2 million to thousands of pro-life charities. 4G LTE coverage is available nationwide, and 5% of your monthly plan cost goes to your favorite pro-life charity. A video introduction is available at CharityMobile.com. Charity Mobile, everyday living, effortless giving. CharityMobile.com.
This program is brought to you in part by the nonprofit St. Paul Street Evangelization. St. John Paul II stated that for the disciple of Christ, evangelization is a duty, an obligation of love, and the Catechism of the Catholic Church states that evangelization is necessary for salvation. So we know we're called, but how do we do it? St. Paul Street Evangelization can help. To learn more, contact us at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Are you looking for an affordable option for your health care? You feel compelled to support pro-life efforts in our country? Then now is the time for you to join CMF Curo. CMF Curo is the country's first healthcare sharing experience that engages church teachings by offering truly pro-life healthcare. CMF Curo members experience healthcare that's ethically consistent with church teachings and rooted in Catholic community. Learn more about CMF Curo and find Catholic healthcare options at mycatholichealthcare.com.
Good afternoon, I'm Al Cresta. Last year's March for Life had an especially dramatic moment, if you remember. It had to do with the high school students from Covington Catholic High in Covington, Kentucky. It turned into a large media circus. And in the backdrop of that incident was a group called the Black Hebrew Israelites, who seemed to play originally an unknown role, but as time went on, we learned a little bit more about their agitations. But who are these Black Hebrew Israelites? Well, my guest, Dr. Ann Hendershot, is professor of sociology and director of the Veritas Center for Ethics and Public Life at the Franciscan University of Steubenville. She's co-author of Renewal, How a New Generation of Priests and Bishops Are Revitalizing the Church. She's been taking a look into this Black Hebrew Israelite group. And Ann, good to have you back here. Thank you.
Oh, thanks for having me. I'm always happy to be on your show. It's good to talk with you again. Yeah, I am interested in this group. I'm worried about this group because they're part of a larger Black nationalist group. I got interested in looking at them, not just because of the Covington, Kentucky school kids who were harassed by them,
right,
but because of the violence that we're seeing all over the place.
There have been two incidents, yeah. Yeah.
They're a very violent group. I mean, I don't want to say all of their offshoots are, but Newark, New Jersey has a cell that seems, and I shouldn't call it a cell, but a group that, yeah. Well, the Southern Poverty Law Center, and I'm not a big fan of theirs,
no,
but they do have some good research on some things, and on black nationalist groups, they have excellent research. And they're really concerned about this new movement of black nationalists that don't just hate Jews. They hate Catholics. They hate all white people. And so whenever there's a large group of Christians and Catholics or Jews, they're often there to cause some trouble.
Yeah.
And the most recent trouble has been in New York, and that's been anti-Semitism, but not just anti-Semitism, but violent anti-Semitism.
Right.
I'm sure your listeners have heard about the kosher market.
Yeah, December 11, 2019, a gun battle.
Gun battle, right. And the kosher market. The people
Jersey
involved
City.
In that were had ties to the Black Hebrew
yeah.
Israelites, a group out of Newark, and then a second in New York. A second incident, Grafton Thomas, a man who stormed a Hanukkah celebration
yeah.
at a rabbi's home and shot up the place.
Wow.
He also had ties to this black nationalist group. So, I mean, I think the violence is escalating, and that's why I've been writing about it. I just wrote a big piece about this in Catholic World Report that your listeners could download on mm-hmm. January 16th. So if they go to
Very
Catholic
good.
World Report, the article's called Envy, Hate, and the Increase in Violent Anti-Semitism.
Where do they come from? I mean, what's the origins of this
Oh,
group?
My goodness. Well, the Southern Poverty Law Center likes to blame Donald Trump, and that's
for
not
this,
it at all.
For this?
They blame Donald Trump for everything. These
mercy.
People have been around for decades. But if you go to their website, they say that that the group is a response to the current climate of racial divisiveness, especially the violence of Donald Trump. Now, that's nonsense.
Yes, it is.
So you have to get through that to get to the good data at the Southern Poverty Law Center, and they list dozens and dozens of groups. I don't want to call them cells. I think in terms of cells. But where you are in Michigan, there is a group. They're called the Israel United in Christ, and that is a subset of Israel United in Christ is a black Hebrew Israelite group,
mm-hmm.
and they've led They had an 800-person march in Tennessee last year. Louis Farrakhan, I know your listeners all know about him.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he is not part of the black Hebrew Israelites, but he hates Jews and Catholics and whites. I would put him as part of the black nationalist movement. But Louis Farrakhan, everybody knows about him. You've known about him for a long time. But these are offshoots of that hatred, and the Nation of Islam is just, I mean, they were around, they've been around forever, and that has nothing to do with Donald Trump.
Right,
so I wouldn't want anyone to think that. But they think that they are the true chosen people,
uh-huh.
and that's why I studied them, because I study envy. My next book is going to be on envy, and I hope you'll invite me back
yeah,
when it's published.
I certainly will.
And envy has a lot to do with this. And it's not that they're consciously envious of those with faith and families and love in their lives, but they are. And my argument is that this is increasing because the envy is increasing. They see themselves, these Israelites, see themselves as the true chosen people. And they're very jealous or envious of the Jews who see themselves as the chosen people. So and there's really much more violence toward Jews right now than there is toward Catholics. I mean, we all became aware of it with the Covington students, but I've been studying this way before the Covington
yeah.
students. I go through Harlem every week when I'm commuting to Ohio
yeah.
because I get on the bus in Harlem. I take the train from Connecticut, and I get on the bus there. I've seen black Hebrew Israelites on the streets. They harass people. They harass not so much me. They don't go after old people. But they go after anybody that they want to harass. They sell their jewelry on tables in Harlem throughout. So I've seen lots of Stars of David there. They see themselves as the true Jews, and they think that the Orthodox Jews that they're, you know, harassing are imposters.
Okay.
So there have been hundreds of violent attacks on Orthodox Jews throughout the city of New York and New Jersey, where they would just see an Orthodox Jew walking down the street and smash him on the head.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't have any idea of how bad this is.
Yeah.
I do, just because I'm there a lot. I live in Connecticut. I'm there a lot. So I do see it. I don't see the violence, of course, but I see the jewelry. I see the violent rhetoric, because they're often on the streets spewing this hate.
What's their objective, though? I mean, what do they hope?
Their objective is to, well, they think that there's going to be a coming of Christ, and he's going to pick them as, you know, the ones who are saved, and white people will be either killed outright or sold into slavery.
Well,
I know that sounds bizarre, but it is what they think.
Okay.
It's very frightening.
Does their behavior have anything to do with bringing about that return of Christ?
Their services ask for that. They pray for that.
Mm-hmm.
They see themselves as the true descendants of the ancient Hebrews.
Yeah. Okay.
And so they see this as an injustice, and they think that the people who sold them into slavery did that to get them out of the way so that they could become the true chosen people. So they're very angry at black African Christians who they think sold them into slavery.
Okay.
It's really a bizarre kind of thing. But, I mean, there are several sects of these black Hebrew Israelites. They have different names. When I lived in San Diego, there was, I mean, before Donald Trump was ever a thought, this was 15 years ago, the Sicari black Hebrew Israelites are a San Diego-based anti-Semitic and racist fringe group. But it isn't just anti-Semitism. It's all whites. I mean, they are the counterpart to the white supremacists that we hear so much more about.
Right.
But it's kind of politically incorrect to say that there are black nationalists who are hate groups also. Nobody really wants to say that.
Yeah.
I think we have to say that, though, because, I mean, just you don't even hear half of these things that I've studied about.
Right.
Miami, Florida, October 2019, a guy named Larry Green, a.k.a. Elijah Israel, a self-identified black Israelite, assaults with a deadly weapon after just assaulting two people as they were leaving a prayer service at a synagogue.
Huh.
Now, we hear about the synagogue, you know, like in Pittsburgh, because that was a white nationalist.
Right.
We always hear about the white nationalists,
right,
but we never hear about the black nationalists.
And these are I'm sure they're being reported to as kind of discrete incidents rather than the product
instead
of a particular ideology.
I'm glad you brought that up, because that is what you study and I do too. The trends, we have to study these trends and put them together,
mm-hmm,
because it's to their credit, the Southern Poverty Law Center has done a great job of putting it together. And we're not paying attention to them because so many of us know that, you know, the Southern Poverty Law Center has been discredited because they put some of our organizations
right,
on the list,
which,
you know,
is crazy,
because we don't support same-sex marriage. So we get put on the list. So we don't pay much attention to them. Well, we need to pay some attention to them because they're almost the only ones. And the ADL. And a lot of people don't like the ADL, the Anti-Defamation
League,
which is a Jewish organization. I think they're wonderful, but whenever I've spoken about them, people will say, oh, you can't really trust them. They make mountains out of molehills. Well, that's not true.
Yeah.
There are some mountains here.
Yeah.
To pay attention to the mountains.
Yeah. So we've got, I mean, you mentioned three incidents plus the Pittsburgh synagogue incident, which claimed 11 lives.
Right.
And that's just in a short conversation that we've had. I mean, imagine.
Oh, and I could tell you dozens of, I have so many, I have dozens of incidents on the streets of New York and St. Louis, and I mean, they're all over in Detroit. But you're not hearing about them because they're just like these bizarre little one-offs, people think. But
that's
not one-offs. They're a pattern. And that's why I think we have to worry about them. And that's why I wrote the article, because I kind of want to bring some attention to it.
Yeah, well, I appreciate you doing that.
Anti-Semitism is a horrible thing. And we kind of think the word doesn't say enough. I think we need to call it violent anti-Semitism. Mm-hmm. And I asked that to be in the title of the article I wrote, violent anti-Semitism. Yeah. Isn't just people a little prejudiced saying, oh, you know, they're this way or they're that way. No, it's people being killed they're Jewish.
Yeah, this is a group that's not going to be a threat. They are a threat right now.
They're a threat. Yeah. They're absolutely a threat. I mean, and they're everywhere. You can buy their stuff on Amazon. You know, they wear this jewelry that's this sort of distortions of Jewish, Orthodox Jewish jewelry, the Stars of David. They'll encrust them with lots of stars or put a lion's head in the middle of it. They have different symbols. Etsy has a whole line of black Hebrew jewelry. It's growing. The woman who was in that lion's pen, do you remember at the Bronx Zoo, there was a woman that went into the lion pen at the zoo? This was a big story. It was a national story, too. This woman just went into the lion's pen because she is a black Hebrew Israelite, and the lion is there. I mean, they see the lion as you know, like Aslan, as Jesus. And she wanted to commune with the lion. Wow. And in court, she went off on, you know, Jews and all that. Nobody read anything about that.
Right.
Not that she was in, well, she wasn't endangering the lion, but she certainly put herself in danger. And it was hard getting her out of there because it was a real lion that she was with.
Yeah.
But you don't hear any of this.
Yeah.
So I'm grateful you're putting this on your station.
Well,
thank you.
Yes, I think, again, these groups need to be highlighted, especially since they don't get reported on as a collective. We just get these discrete incidents. So we'll talk again about this, because no doubt this story is going to come back again. Ian, thank you so much.
All right, thank you.
Yes, and we'll make sure that your article, Envy, Hate, and the Increase in Violent Anti-Semitism, is available. Catholic World Report will have it in the guest archive.
All Saints Catholic School in Canton is hosting an open house Sunday, January 26th from 11 until 2 p.m. All Saints is a caring Catholic community that educates students from preschool throughout 8th grade. Families are invited to visit the campus for a tour. All Saints offers dynamic academic programs in a community centered on Jesus Christ. For more information, visit allsaintscs.com. That's allsaintscs.com. Or call 734-459-2490.
It's a new year and a new decade, and we're celebrating with our Start Something New sale going on now. Hi, I'm Dan Hall from Pinckney Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram. And now you can lease a new Jeep Compass or a new Jeep Cherokee for as low as $239 a month, or a new Jeep Grand Cherokee for as low as $333 a month. Come in and choose your next new Jeep from 10 acres loaded with inventory only at Pinckney Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram, or visit us online at PinckneyChrysler.com.
If you believe in the power of prayer, Ave Maria Radio invites you to look at their website to submit a prayer request at AveMariaRadio.net. Your prayer requests are shared with hundreds at the Dominican Sisters of Mary, Mother of the Eucharist, the Servants of God's Love, the Monastery of the Blessed Sacrament Cloistered Nuns, the Family of Faith Apostolate, and the staff of Ave Maria Radio. Just go to AveMariaRadio.net and click on the Community tab to submit your prayer request today.
Men, now is the time to accept the challenge to defend families and culture. Tickets are almost sold out for the Diocese of Lansing Men's Conference on Saturday, February 22nd from 9 to 6 p.m. at Oosterbaum Fieldhouse in Ann Arbor. There'll be Mass, Adoration, six dynamic speakers led by Bishop Boyer, Father Larry Richards, and Father Matthias Thaler. Rise up and register at acceptthechallenge.org. Go to acceptthechallenge.org today.
I thank you very much for being with me this last hour, reminding you that the topics we discuss on this program are available for further research in our Cresta Guest Archive. head on over there to AveMariaRadio.net. Go to the Cresta Guest Archive. You can get further information on the pro-life movement grassroots dimension. We were talking about Father Gabriel Richard High School. Also, the work of Real Estate for Life. That's, again, David Tyson. We'll have the article that Ann Hendershot wrote for Catholic World Report available in the Cresta Guest Archive as well. Next hour, we're going to look at a flawed study that was just released about post-abortive women and their attitudes towards abortion. Michael New will be my guest. He's been really investigating the methodology of the study. I'm going to deliver some words on why abortion should be considered the morally defining issue of this generation. Unfortunately, the moral momentum, of the civil rights movement has, I guess in many ways, been hijacked by the movement for civil rights for various sexual minorities. I'll argue, in fact, that that's a misplaced concern. The moral momentum of the civil rights movement should have been directed towards expanding the range of protections for that most weakest among us, the unborn child. And then President Trump will address the nation at the March for Life. So stay with me. We'll have the entire talk.
This hour of Cresta in the Afternoon is co-produced by Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta, thanking you for joining me on this day that we celebrate the March for Life in Washington, D.C. We'll be going there to hear President Donald Trump. About 12:30 today, he gave a talk, about 13, 14-minute long, an outstanding talk, in fact. First president to ever show up at the March for Life and to address the American people. But we've had presidents send videos before. They've sent surrogates before, but never has an American president. I mean, it's just not that far away. They could have done it. They didn't do it. But Donald Trump made much of the fact that he's there, and really, it's always been perplexing why American presidents who supported the life of the unborn, it was always surprising why they wouldn't show up at the March for Life. Well, President Trump has changed that. Now, abortion continues to be a major problem in America, and 47 years ago, Roe v. Wade began splitting the American people into those who believe that the unborn deserve the protections of law and should be considered among we the people, and those Americans who think the unborn should not be considered among we the people. This split is not going away, in my opinion, is at the heart of the political polarization in America today. There are lots of other issues, don't get me wrong. But the most principled division in American politics is this division over the moral status of unborn human life. When we say we the people, does that include unborn humans? Or should we regard unborn humans as non-persons? And there's no hint that this split is going to be resolved anytime soon. Neither side is flagging in its enthusiasm or its commitment. We're going to be talking about that today. A new study about attitudes of post-abortive women we'll analyze with Michael New. I'll have some words on the importance of abortion as the morally defining issue of this generation. And then we'll hear the entirety of President Trump's address to the March for Life. But first, the headlines.
Thanks, Al. Good afternoon, everyone. This is your Ave Maria Radio News for Friday, January 24th. It's the Feast of St. Francis de Sales. Today's news is brought to you by the Ave Maria Family of Funds at AveMariaFunds.com. Today, President Trump became the first president to address the March for Life live and in person.
We're here for a very simple reason, to defend the right of every child, born and unborn, to fulfill their God-given potential.
Trump told the crowd at the 47th annual march that he's appointed judges who will protect the lives of the unborn. We'll air the entire speech later this hour. Congressman Hakeem Jeffries says President Trump's actions attack the character of the U.S. During Trump's Senate impeachment trial, the New York Democrat argued that the president tried to cheat, then attempted to cover it up, and got caught.
President Trump abused his power and corrupted the highest office in the land.
Colorado Democrat Jason Crow insisted that Trump illegally withheld vital U.S. military aid to Ukraine while pressuring Ukraine to investigate Democrats. The president's defense team is scheduled to begin opening arguments tomorrow morning. The NFL's New Orleans Saints are going to court to keep the public from seeing hundreds of emails that allegedly show team executives doing public relations damage control for the area's Roman Catholic Archdiocese to help contain the fallout from the sexual abuse crisis. Attorneys for about two dozen men suing the church say in court filings that the 276 documents they obtained through discovery show that the team, whose owner is devoutly Catholic, aided the Archdiocese of New Orleans in its, quote, pattern and practice of concealing its crimes. Saints attorneys disputed any suggestion that the team helped the church cover up crimes and said that the emails were intended to be private and should not be, quote, fodder for the public. The Archdiocese is also fighting the release of the emails as well. I.G. Clark, Ave Maria, Radio News.
Good afternoon, I'm Al Cresta. A new study released last week purports to show that few women regret their decision to obtain an abortion. The study received, predictably, a great deal of sympathetic coverage from media outlets like The Washington Post, The Hill, The Guardian, and CNN, but little attention was paid to some of the methodological problems of the study and its limitations. My guest, Dr. Michael New, will take a look at it with us. He's visiting assistant professor at Catholic University of America and an associate scholar at the Charlotte Leger Institute. Michael, thank you for joining me.
Oh, thanks for having me, Al. Much appreciated.
So this study, why don't you describe what the study was, and then we can go into what its problems are.
This is the latest installment of something called the Abortion Turnaway Project. And you had a team of researchers from University of California, San Francisco, and this is a place that has a very strong bias in favor of legal abortion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they approached women at about 30 or so different abortion facilities, some of whom had abortions, some of whom did not, part because of gestational age limits. And they were able to track these women, both who did and did not get abortions, for over a span of about 5 years or so. And what this latest study looks at is abortion regret. And what this study claims to show is that a relatively small percentage of women who obtained abortions went on to regret that decision. That said, there are kind of quite a lot of flaws with the research and the way it was set up.
How were these women selected?
Well, they went to, I guess, 30 abortion facilities in 21 states and approached women seeking abortions or who were abortion-minded and asked them to participate. But again, there are some problems here. First off, according to the study, by their own admission, only about 38% of the women who they approached agreed to take part. So you have more than half, almost two-thirds, not participating. And I think the sort of women who participated are going to be a little bit different than women who declined. You know, a woman who's willing to answer personal questions about an abortion is probably a woman who's has fewer moral qualms about it, who is more sympathetic toward legal abortion, who's probably more certain of her decision, and that skews the survey. Another important shortcoming is that they lose a lot of the women over time, that they did follow-up interviews every 6 months. And with any survey of this nature, some women don't respond. Even though women received compensation to, you know, do the follow-up surveys, many did not. 5 years later, only about 58% of women could they reach. Only about, again, 58% of women, you know, did the follow-up survey 5 years later.
Okay.
So you're losing a lot of women here. And again, I think those women who drop out of the survey are probably women who are suffering in terms of economics or suffering in terms of emotional distress. Again, the women who took part were, again, probably those women who were more confident in their decision, suffered less regret. And again, I just think that really skews the results.
What studies do we have on record? Do we have any reliable studies on record about post-abortion attitudes of women?
Well, essentially, we do have some good studies. That Priscilla Coleman, who's a tenured professor at Bowling Green University in Ohio, has done a lot of work on this. She's actually done studies for the British Journal of Psychiatry, which is a competitive peer-reviewed journal. She did like a meta-study, which looked at over hundreds of thousands of women and did find good evidence that when you look at women and you track them for a long period of time, you do see kind of higher levels of emotional distress, and you do see an increased risk for kind of mental and psychological problems. And again, this is published in a very reputable mainstream public health journal, and again, looking at a lot of studies with a lot of women over a long period of time, she did find there is an increased risk of anxiety, depression, a whole host of psychological disorders. My friend Paul Sullins, who retired from Catholic University of America,
sociologist there,
research, he published a journal in a Swiss journal, Medicina, and he was able to kind of take a unique approach, where he looked at women who obtained abortions of wanted pregnancies. So these situations where a woman wants to get pregnant, but seeks an abortion because her partner or her parents or someone else in her life does not want her to carry that child to term. And when you look at those women who abort wanted pregnancies, again, you do see very good evidence. That dramatically increases public health problems or mental health problems. He found that any abortion increased the risk of depression or anxiety or suicidality. But that risk was much, much higher if that pregnancy was wanted. So there is good, reputable research in solid public health journals showing that, again, people who seek abortions, obtain abortions, are more likely to suffer from mental health problems.
So the response then for this most recent study is to what point out that relatively low numbers of women chose to participate in the study, and those who chose, obviously, you have to ask why they chose to participate in the study. So there's a self-selection problem.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
And then not only, do you have the subset of women who chose, but again, a fairly high percentage of women who chose couldn't be reached 5 years later.
Yeah, that's a
again,
it was very good
these
point.
Follow-up interviews. And again, I think women who drop out of something like this are probably women who are suffering psychologically or are suffering regret. But because they drop out, they're not part of the survey and not part of the results.
Yeah. And we certainly know from testimony of many women that many women clearly have regret about past abortions. Well, let me switch gears here because there's an opinion poll out, a new Marist poll, that shows 70% of Americans support major restrictions on abortion and that 55% of Americans would ban abortion after 20 weeks. Tell me a little bit about this study.
Right. The Knights of Columbus does a very fine service. Every year they do always release this very good poll of abortion attitudes. That one thing that their poll does that many pollsters don't do is they look at support for incremental pro-life laws. Many pollsters like to ask, are you pro-life or pro-choice? Should Roe v. Wade be upheld or overturned? Public opinion is a lot more nuanced. And what the Knights always do is they ask very good questions about incremental laws. Should there be limits on late-term abortions? Should there be parental involvement laws? Should there be limits on taxpayer funding of abortion? And when you look at these incremental things, you do find very consistently, that majorities, oftentimes super majorities, do support incremental things that pro-life is doing. Most Americans don't like abortion and do support common sense limitations like this. Yeah. So, again, the Knights have another poll. It shows, once again, that a lot of the incremental things that pro-lifers are working on, both at the federal level and at the state level, do really enjoy very broad public support.
It is amazing, after all these years, abortion remains stigmatized among Americans. Americans may not want to eliminate the ability to choose abortion entirely, but very clearly, over and over again, you look at these polls, and Americans don't like abortion. They want to limit it.
I think that the status quo is clearly at odds with kind of public attitudes.
Have there been any major changes in the public's attitude on abortion since Roe v. Wade, or have the results public opinion remained pretty much stable?
Well, there are some interesting shifts, and you have to look at the data closely. First, one thing I would definitely say is that you do see a higher percentage of Americans willing to identify as pro-life. Gallup has been asking these polls for a long time. And in, 1995, only 33% of Americans identified as pro-life. Their most recent poll, June of 2019, showed that number reached 49%, a plurality. So in the Gallup polls, pro-lifers do often achieve a plurality, and a couple of times even achieved a majority. So that's good news. There's also been some good news looking at the attitudes of young adults. The General Social Survey has been doing polling on abortion since the early 70s, and that's the source of data that most academic researchers who study public opinion use. And during the 70s, they found this big generation gap. Elderly Americans tended to be very pro-life. Young people were very pro-choice. But that started to change. Starting in the early 2000s, you saw a real shift among young people. And if you look at the series of polls taken in the early 2000s up to about 2008, 2009, 2010, young people were actually the most pro-life age demographic according to these polls. So we've seen greater support for the pro-life position, and we've made some good gains amongst young people. So I think that gives us a lot of hope for the future.
Yeah, very good. Michael, thanks so much. Great talking with you again. Michael New is assistant professor at Catholic University, also associate scholar at the Charlotte Leger Institute. You know, he talked about making progress and a lot of hope for the future. And I think that's true. At the same time, I also recognize that whether things are going our way or not, we still have the basic responsibility to bear witness. I think of, again, 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 9. You are God's own people, that you may declare the wonderful deeds of him who called you out of darkness into his marvelous light. You are a people of life for life. John Paul II makes that point in the last section of his Gospel of Life, Evangelium Vitae. And he points out, look, the church has received the gospel as a proclamation and a source of joy and salvation. She's received it as a gift from Jesus. We've been sent by the Father, just as Jesus was sent by the Father, to preach good news to the poor. The church has received this gospel through the apostles, sent by Christ to the whole world. And the gospel of life is born out of Jesus' promise that he came to bring everlasting life, eternal life, abundant life. Human flourishing is what God created us for and what Christ died to bring us. John Paul II has this beautiful, he doesn't split the gospel from social justice or, you know, social action or whatever you want to call it. Our activism just flows from the fact that we've received this divine life. We are, again, this is from Evangelium Vitae, we are the people of life because God in his unconditional love has given us the gospel of life, and by this same gospel we've been transformed and saved. We've been ransomed by the author of life at the price of his precious blood. And through these passages, by the way, he's loading up scripture. So actually this makes a very good biblical study. Through the waters of baptism, we have been made a part of him, as branches which draw nourishment and fruitfulness from the one tree. Interiorly renewed by this grace of the Spirit, who is the Lord and giver of life, we have become a people of life, and we are called to act accordingly. He stresses, we have been sent as a people, and together we all sense our duty to preach the gospel of life, to celebrate it in the liturgy and in our whole existence, and to serve it with the various programs and structures which support and promote life. He quotes then from 1 John chapter 1, verse 3, "That which we have seen and heard, we proclaim also to you, proclaiming this gospel of life." Again, this is the part 4 of St. John Paul II's Evangelium Vitae. Take a look at it. It's one of his most popularly written encyclicals. I'm Al Cresta.
When a U.S. Catholic hears the word mission, they envision priests, brothers, and sisters in foreign countries. Father William Bishop, founder of Glenmary Home Missioners, realized that vast regions of our own country, primarily Appalachia and the South, were in need of Catholic missionaries too. Glenmary is a Catholic community of priests, brothers, sisters, and lay missioners serving Mission Land USA. Come and see if God is calling you to be a Glenmary missioner. For more information, visit glenmary.org. That's glenmary.org.
Myler & Zipka Certified Public Accountants is proud to support Ave Maria Radio programming. Myler & Zipka offer great services to WDEO listeners in Metro Detroit for all of your accounting and tax needs. Call Ken Zipka and let him know you appreciate him helping to keep Catholic radio alive in this area. Ken can be reached at 734-930-5500. That's 734-930-5500. Or on the web at mspccpa.com.
Sacred Heart Catholic School in Dearborn is having its open house on January 26th from 12:30 to 2:30. Sacred Heart is a pre-K to 8th grade school that has been educating students for over 100 years, focusing on academic excellence, faith formation, and service inspired by the teachings of Jesus. To join, call the school office at 313-561-9192 to register. That's 313-561-9192.
Happy New Year and welcome to a new decade. It's 2020. What better way to start it off than with a new Ram truck? Hi, I'm Dan Hall from Pinckney Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram. And during our Start Something New sale going on now, you can lease a new Ram Crew Cab 4x4 for as low as $239 a month. This is Motor Trend's Truck of the Year 2 years in a row. We have 10 acres loaded with inventory for you to pick your next new truck. Only at Pinckney Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram or visit us online at PinckneyChrysler.com.
Hi, everybody. Dr. Ray here. My newest book, Raising Upright Kids in an Upside Down World, help you stand strong against the culture no longer on your side to identify all of the forces trying to misshape your child. To help you stand strong against those forces, to resist them, to recognize them so you can raise the kind of kid you wish to raise. You can get the new book at AveMariaRadio.net. That is AveMariaRadio.net.
This program is brought to you in part by Charity Mobile, a proud partner of Ave Maria Radio for over 10 years. Charity Mobile is the pro-life cell phone company and has sent nearly $2 million to thousands of pro-life charities. 4G LTE coverage is available nationwide, and 5% of your monthly plan cost goes to your favorite pro-life charity. A video introduction is available at CharityMobile.com. Charity Mobile, everyday living, effortless giving. CharityMobile.com.
Hello, this is Steve Ray, and I'd like to invite you to an event that takes place only once every 10 years, the Oberammergau Passion Play in Germany. But we have a whole pilgrimage built around it, going through Munich, even going to see Dachau, going to go through Switzerland and down into northern Italy to Milan. This is only once every 10 years. It's going to be great. We already have reservations. We would like you to join us.
To learn more about your Ave Maria Radio trip, go to AveMariaRadio.net and find the pilgrimage link. Cresta in the Afternoon is underwritten by the following nonprofit organization, Real Estate for Life. Buying or selling your home or business property? Real Estate for Life can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 80% of the referral check to Ave Maria Radio and Students for Life. More information at realestateforlife.org or 877-LIFE-US1. That's realestateforlife.org.
Good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta on this day of the March for Life. I've said for at least the last 20 years that abortion is the morally defining issue of this generation because it's about the very definition of what it means to be human. And just as race was the morally defining issue of the last generation, so abortion is to this generation. As baby boomers are getting older, though, we're taking a look at it and asking if, in fact, it remains the morally defining issue of this generation. I think it has to, because it does deal with what it means to be human. Who we're going to accept as one of us, right? Are they included under the idea of we, the people? For now, we've settled, at least at the rhetorical level, the issue of race. No one can stand tall and unassailed in America while using, you know, the N-word or making outrageous remarks about race or ethnicity. No one can declare himself opposed to the full civic liberty and protection and opportunity of black Americans. Racism might persist, and personal prejudice might persist, but it doesn't get any public applause. If one fails to use the proper politically correct language, in fact, on issues of race and ethnicity, you can be expected all kinds of shame from the Twitter tribe. As we saw with actor Jussie Smollett, in fact, people can stage crimes in order to cash in on the moral capital that accompanies being a victim of white privilege or more general forms of oppression. The only people of color that you can sin against are unborn children of color. For 20 years, as I said, I've been saying, and others have too, that abortion is the defining moral issue of this generation. The same logic that protected the dignity of black Americans could have been extended to protect unborn Americans. Alveda King, niece of civil rights leader Martin Luther King Jr. and daughter of civil rights activist A.D. King, has been making this case for years. Tragically, however, our nation took the moral momentum generated by the Black Civil Rights Movement and used it not to protect the right to life of all, but to protect sexual minorities, from homosexual marriage to now any new variation one might find in the LGBTQ rights catalog. The once noble cause of civil rights has degenerated into an obsessive search to find what some new sexual minority needs protecting. Pro-life feminists were written and run out of the fight for equal opportunity for women. That was a decision made by the national organization. One of the foremothers of modern feminism, Gloria Steinem, repeated to me during an interview that abortion has become the sine qua non of modern feminism. Without supporting abortion, you cannot be an authentic feminist. Without abortion, she insists, and she's not alone, there is no modern feminism. Pro-abortion groups have been urging women to wear T-shirts celebrating their abortions. Comedian Michelle Wolf says, "I'm proud to have aborted." And she's performed a very silly and trashy skit called Salute to Abortion, in which she wraps the slaughter of unborn life in the American flag and applauds the killing of human life as a gift of America to women. In a healthy nation, no one applauds the shedding of innocent blood. You know, it's one thing to claim that abortion is a tragic necessity. It's an entirely different matter to celebrate it as a badge of female empowerment, especially since roughly half those snuffed out by abortion are female. The public outcry one might expect from a saner and sober news media won't happen, because we know that at least 80% of our nation's elite journalists and broadcasters are vigorously pro-choice, pro-abortion. Recently, we've seen the rebirth of the old late 19th and early 20th century political word progressive. It's now being applied to left-wing Democrats who are really more to the left than your classic liberal Democrat. Progressivism used to mean an approach to politics that advocated for social reform, and it was always on the side of the weak, the poor, the vulnerable, those who didn't have a voice. Progressives in the era of Teddy Roosevelt sided with labor against the big trusts and monopolies. It sided with ghetto dwellers against those landlords who took advantage of them. You get the idea. It was all about improving the human condition for those who lacked the resources to take advantage of the opportunities that were out there for the upper classes. One of the hilarities of our present political situation is the wedding of progressive with socialist. Experiments in socialism have not turned out too well for the vulnerable and the poor. Look at what's happened in the former Soviet Union or Cuba or North Korea or Venezuela or Nicaragua. I used to like the word progressive before its recent sabotaging. In world history, America was considered a progressive nation, especially in its founding, because it gave political voice to those who lacked it. We were making progress when it came to accepting humanity. I continue to hope that America will be a truly progressive and humane nation in that sense. But to be progressive always meant to side with the weak against the strong. The progressive voice was used to consistently expand the circle of our civic community. Now, it hasn't been easy. It's often been bloody, messy, unsettling, and throughout its history, true Christian progressive have always rested their activism on the bedrock principle that human life has intrinsic dignity. True progressives always creatively apply that principle, in America anyways, to widen the circle of who's accepted as an American. African Americans, Jews, Catholics, immigrants, women are now fully regarded as persons, fully human, fully citizens, welcomed as members of society. It wasn't always that way. And I'm still asking, why not expand our circle of acceptance to include the unborn? What perverse definition of liberty pits itself against life, and in this case, the life of the unborn? Abortion is about division. It's about destruction. It pits born against unborn. It pits mother against child. It invites the mother to smother her natural affection for her child as she invites abortionists to do a search and destroy mission in her womb. Abortion favors the strong against the weak. It gives the strong the freedom to define who gets to live and who gets to die. It gives the strong the magical power to value or devalue another human life. 47 years ago, Roe v. Wade split and began destroying America's soul in the same way that it splits a mother's soul from her baby's body. There's no explaining. Modern American political divisions, there's no way of explaining today's high polarization and partisanship without looking at the place of abortion in our political history. The Republican Party has successfully managed to become the pro-life party. And the Democrats, although they had the opportunity, because there were many Catholic Democrats, they had the chance to remain open to protecting unborn life, have chosen not to. And for many of us, this is the dividing line in modern American politics. Like I said, abortion is the morally defining issue of this generation. Today, we remember that raw act of judicial power, roughly 47 years ago, in which our Supreme Court swept aside state laws protecting the unborn. In my current home state of Michigan, citizens consistently rejected abortion in referenda until the Supreme Court forced abortion upon us. A recent Marist poll shows that nearly 75% of Americans want to restrict abortion to some degree. America still knows there's something shabby and wrong with abortion. 47 years ago, we had pro-abortion propaganda, and it's been going since, and it has not been able to destigmatize abortion. Abortion remains undesirable. Even with those who may say it's a tragic necessity, the emphasis is upon tragic. The power to define is the power to control. So those who want to lord it over others or to eliminate others redefine the other. Before we raise the guillotine or aim the rifle or set the mine, we have to reduce the personhood of the person we're exterminating. We call the Viet Cong Gooks. We know the engineering of social attitudes always requires manipulation and debasing of language. So unborn children were no longer called my baby or your baby. The unborn are redefined as products of conception, or blobs of tissue, or parasites in a woman's body, or subhuman, or prehuman, or non-persons. Those who we would kill, we have to first reject. And we do that, first of all, through language. They're not one of us. But in a Christian understanding of life, liberty, freedom, and life are not fundamentally opposed. Those who claim children must die if women are to be free are lying. Abortion is not just a minor legal accommodation to enhance the liberty of women. It's the extinguishing of one of our own. It's an attack on how we define our humanity. We just recently recognized, January 9th, the 11th death anniversary of Father Richard John Newhouse, who is one of our most articulate defenders of human life. And I'll close with some of his words. We contend, and we contend relentlessly, for the dignity of the human person, of every human person, created in the image and likeness of God, destined from eternity for eternity. Every human person, no matter how weak or how strong, no matter how young or how old, no matter how productive or how burdensome, no matter how welcome or how inconvenient, nobody is a nobody. Nobody is unwanted. All are wanted by God and therefore to be respected, protected, and cherished by us. We shall not weary, we shall not rest, as we stand guard at the entrance gates and the exit gates of life, and at every step along the way, bearing witness in word and deed to the dignity of the human person, of every human person. Against the encroaching shadows of the culture of death, against forces commanding immense power and wealth, against the perverse doctrine that a woman's dignity depends upon her right to destroy her child. We do not know, we do not need to know, how the battle for the dignity of the human person will be resolved. God knows, and that's enough. as Mother Teresa of Calcutta and saints beyond numbering have taught us, our task is not necessarily to be successful, but to be faithful. Those are good words from the late Father Richard John Newhouse. For Aristotle, the first political question was, how ought we to live our lives together? The question of abortion is about who are the we that are worth protecting. Will we expand the circle of protection around the unborn? Only God knows if America will choose life. Our task is to continue to insist that she does. I'm Al Cresta.
Your faith is important to you. You've carried it with you through the years, growing closer to God every day. You can't imagine life without your faith, and Henry Ford Village wouldn't have it any other way. Henry Ford Village Senior Living Community in Dearborn features a large, beautiful chapel with Sunday Mass each week, a 24/7 tabernacle, and a full-time Catholic minister on staff. Close to church, closer to faith, and it's only the beginning. Call 877-796-3458 to schedule your personalized Henry Ford Village visit today.
The Wine Palace in Livonia is a proud sponsor of Ave Maria Radio. The Wine Palace is a family-owned business for over 60 years where customers come in for a great service. The 9,000-square-foot store includes a humidor, specialty wine room, deli, and a rare and collectible spirits room. We have the largest selection of spirits in the state at the most competitive prices. Ask for one of the brothers, Cliff or Kelly, and thank them for their strong support of Catholic Radio. Delivery is available. Please visit the Wine Palace at I-96 in Middlebelt or at winepalace.net.
Our Lady of Good Counsel Parish School is located in Plymouth. We are a Catholic school serving students in pre-K to 8th grade. At OLGC Parish School, we exist to offer a life-changing encounter with Jesus while equipping leaders to transform the culture. Come see our dynamic school at our open house, Sunday, January 26th from 1:30 to 3:30. Go to IamOLGC.com for more details. That's IamOLGC.com.
If you believe in the power of prayer, Ave Maria Radio invites you to look at their website to submit a prayer request at AveMariaRadio.net. Your prayer requests are shared with hundreds at the Dominican Sisters of Mary, Mother of the Eucharist, the Servants of God's Love, the Monastery of the Blessed Sacrament Cloistered Nuns, the Family of Faith Apostolate, and the staff of Ave Maria Radio. Just go to AveMariaRadio.net and click on the Community tab to submit your prayer request today.
The Bible is very clear about the need to respect our elders. And that would mean we rarely offer criticism to our superiors, or if we do, it will be with strict qualifications. In Timothy, it reads, "Do not rebuke an older man harshly, but exhort him as if he were your father. Treat younger men as brothers, older women as mothers, and younger women as sisters with absolute purity. Give proper recognition to those widows who are really in need." So how can we criticize our elders, including our parents, when the commandments call us to honor them? Well, we do it with love. As hard as that may be for some of us, find a place of peace and love inside your heart and soul before you approach anyone about something that is bothering you, including your elders. We all need to learn from Scripture that says in Proverbs, "Listen to advice and accept instruction, that you may gain wisdom in the future." This has been a Christ Center Communication message. I'm Vanessa Denha-Garmo, a communications evangelist.
Solidarity HealthShare began out of the Christian tradition of neighbor helping neighbor. They're a nonprofit medical cost-sharing ministry in which their members share in each other's eligible medical expenses. Solidarity HealthShare is not insurance, but rather an alternative way to pay for medical costs that adheres to the teachings of the Catholic Church. They'll never share in a medical care that goes against their values and morals, such as abortion, contraception, and sterilization. More information available at SolidarityHealthShare.org or at 844-313-4999.
When the need for senior care arises, home is where the heart is. Visiting Angels provides home care for mom or dad up to 24 hours per day, including personal care, meals, and light housework. You may select your professional caregiver with Visiting Angels. More information at VisitingAngels.com or at 877-374-LIVE. That's 877-374-LIVE. Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care.
Good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta, and as promised at the top of the hour, we now listen to President Donald Trump, the first American president to actually go to the March for Life. He didn't send a surrogate. He didn't send a videotape. He came himself. And I wanted you to hear his entire presentation to all those who in Washington, D.C. this morning at the March for Life. Take a listen.
Well, thank you very much, and thank you, Jeannie. It is my profound honor to be the first president in history to attend the March for Life. We're here for a very simple reason, to defend the right of every child, born and unborn, to fulfill their God-given potential. For 47 years, Americans of all backgrounds have traveled from across the country to stand for life. And today, as President of the United States, I am truly proud to stand with you. I want to welcome tens of thousands. This is a tremendous turnout. Tens of thousands of high school and college students who took long bus rides to be here in our nation's capital. And to make you feel even better, there are tens of thousands of people outside that we passed on the way in. If anybody would like to give up their spot, we could work that out. You have a tremendous group of people outside. Thousands and thousands wanted to get in. This is some great success. Young people are the heart of the March for Life, and it's your generation that is making America the pro-family, pro-life nation. The Life Movement is led by strong women, amazing faith leaders, and brave students who carry on the legacy of pioneers before us, who fought to raise the conscience of our nation and uphold the rights of our citizens. You embrace mothers with care and compassion. You are powered by prayer and motivated by pure, unselfish love. You're grateful, and we are so grateful. These are incredible people, to be joined by Secretary Alex Azar and Kellyanne Conway. Thank you. And thanks also to Senators Mike Lee and James Lankford, who are here. James, Mike. Thank you, fellas. And Representatives Steve Scalise, Chris Smith, Ralph Abraham, Warren Davidson, Bob Latta, John Joyce, Lloyd Smucker, Brian Fitzpatrick, and Brad Winstrup. Thank you all. And I have to say, and I look at it, I see it exactly, we have many, many more politicians in the audience, but if you don't mind, I won't introduce them all. All of us here today understand an eternal truth. Every child is a precious and sacred gift from God. Together, we must protect, cherish, and defend the dignity and the sanctity of every human life. When we see the image of a baby in the womb, we glimpse the majesty of God's creation. When we hold a newborn in our arms, we know the endless love that each child brings to a family. When we watch a child grow, we see the splendor that radiates from each human soul. One life changes the world. From my family, and I can tell you, I send love, and I send great, great love. And from the first day in office, I've taken a historic action to support America's families and to protect the unborn. And during my first week in office, I reinstated and expanded the Mexico City policy, and we issued a landmark pro-life rule to govern the use of Title X taxpayer funding. I notified Congress that I would veto any legislation that weakens pro-life policies or that encourages the destruction of human life. At the United Nations, I made clear that global bureaucrats have no business attacking the sovereignty of nations that protect innocent life. Unborn children have never had a stronger defender in the White House. And as the Bible tells us, each person is wonderfully made. We have taken decisive action to protect the religious liberty. So important, religious liberty has been under attack all over the world and, frankly, very strongly attacked in our nation. You see it better than anyone, but we are stopping it. And we're taking care of doctors, nurses, teachers, and groups like the Little Sisters of the Poor. We are preserving faith-based adoption. And to uphold our founding documents, we have confirmed 187 federal judges who apply the Constitution as written, including two phenomenal Supreme Court justices, Neil Gorsuch and Brett Kavanaugh. We are protecting pro-life students' right to free speech on college campuses. And if universities want federal taxpayer dollars, then they must uphold your First Amendment right to speak your mind. And if they don't, they pay a very big financial penalty, which they will not be willing to pay. Sadly, the far left is actively working to erase our God-given rights, shut down faith-based charities, ban religious believers from the public square, and silence Americans who believe in the sanctity of life. They are coming after me because I am fighting for you, and we are fighting for those who have no voice, and we will win because we know how to win. We all know how to win. We all know how to win. You've been winning for a long time. You've been winning for a long time. Together we are the voice for the voiceless. When it comes to abortion, Democrats, and you know this, you've seen what's happened, Democrats have embraced the most radical and extreme positions taken and seen in this country for years and decades. And you could even say for centuries. Nearly every top Democrat in Congress now supports taxpayer-funded abortion all the way up until the moment of birth. Last year, lawmakers in New York cheered with delight upon the passage of legislation that would allow a baby to be ripped from the mother's womb right up until delivery. Then we had the case of the Democrat governor in the state of Virginia, the Commonwealth of Virginia. And we love the Commonwealth of Virginia, but what is going on in Virginia? What is going on? The governor stated that he would execute a baby after birth. You remember that. Senate Democrats even blocked legislation that would give medical care to babies who survived attempted abortions. And that's why I've called on Congress, two of our great senators here, so many of our congressmen here, and called upon them to defend the dignity of life and to pass legislation prohibiting late-term abortion of children who can feel pain in their mother's womb. This year, the March for Life is celebrating the 100th anniversary of the 19th Amendment, which forever enshrined women's rights to vote in the United States and given by the United States Constitution. Such a big event. Today, millions of extraordinary women across America are using the power of their votes to fight for the right and all of their rights as given in the Declaration of Independence. It's the right to life. To all the women here today, your devotion and your leadership uplifts our entire nation, and we thank you for that. The tens of thousands of Americans gathered today not only stand for life, it's really here that they stand for it so proudly together, and I want to thank everybody for that. You stand for life each and every day. You provide housing, education, jobs, and medical care to the women that you serve. You find loving families for children in need of a forever home. You host baby showers for expecting moms. You just make it your life's mission to help spread God's grace. And to all of the moms here today, we celebrate you and we declare that mothers are heroes. Your strength, devotion, and drive is what powers our nation. And because of you, our country has been blessed with amazing souls who have changed the course of human history. We cannot know what our citizens yet unborn will achieve, the dreams they will imagine, the masterpieces they will create, the discoveries they will make. But we know this: every life brings love into this world. Every child brings joy to a family. Every person is worth protecting. And above all, we know that every human soul is divine and every human life, born and unborn, is made in the holy image of Almighty God. Together, we will defend this truth all across our magnificent land. We will set free the dreams of our people. And with determined hope, we look forward to all of the blessings that will come from the beauty, talent, purpose, nobility, and grace of every American child. I want to thank you. This is a very special moment. It's so great to represent you. I love you all. And I say with true passion, thank you, God bless you, and God bless America. Thank you all. Thank you.
That was President Donald Trump, the first American president to actually address in person the March for Life. We've had surrogates in the past. We've had videotapes in the past. We've had vice presidents in the past. But never has an American president in 47 years of the March for Life actually been there to address all those who came from around the nation in support of life. It was a strong talk, and I'm sure there'll be many references to it in the near future.
Are you looking for an affordable option for your health care? You feel compelled to support pro-life efforts in our country? Then now is the time for you to join CMF Curo. CMF Curo is the country's first healthcare sharing experience that engages church teachings by offering truly pro-life healthcare. CMF Curo members experience healthcare that's ethically consistent with church teachings and rooted in Catholic community. Learn more about CMF Curo and find Catholic healthcare options at mycatholichealthcare.com.
Hello, this is Steve Ray, and I'd like to invite you to an event that takes place only once every 10 years, the Oberammergau Passion Play in Germany. But we have a whole pilgrimage built around it, going through Munich, even going to see Dachau, going to go through Switzerland and down into northern Italy to Milan. This is only once every 10 years. It's going to be great. We already have reservations. We would like you to join us.
To learn more about your Ave Maria Radio trip, go to AveMariaRadio.net and find the pilgrimage link.
Hey, Bill.
I was looking at retiring soon, but I don't know what to do about filing for Social Security or what to do with my 401k.
Jim, you should call Joe Vitale at American Retirement Advisors. He helped us roll over a 401k to Catholic values-based investments, as well as helped us with our Social Security planning to maximize our benefit. You can give him a call at 855-756-5700 or go to his website at aradvisorsinc.com.
Would you get on a plane that doesn't have a pilot? Investing in passive index mutual funds may present the same issue. The Ave Maria mutual funds are actively managed by seasoned investment professionals to help you meet your investment goals in a morally responsible way. Ave Maria funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors could invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. You can learn more about the Ave Maria mutual funds at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Good afternoon, I'm Al Cresta. Thank you for being with me today. And I should let you know that next week, really beginning this weekend, Ave Maria Radio and Corporate Travel will be engaged in our first Good News Marriage Cruise. So I'll be away a little bit of next week, and we'll have some great guest hosts. I've also recorded some important interviews. We're going to be coming up to the feast of Saint Francis de Sales, and we've located a woman who spent her doctoral dissertation looking at Francis de Sales' attempt to convert the Genevan Christians after the Protestant Reformation there. Dr. Ray will be joining me next week talking raising upright kids. And I should say that Teresa Tamio and Dr. Ray Guarendi, Father John Ricardo, and myself all gathering together for the Good News Marriage Cruise next week. Keep us in your prayers, and I'll let you know how it went. Thanks so much. I'm Al Cresta.
Cresta in the Afternoon is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio, and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. To follow up on any of the guests or information presented on today's program, visit the Cresta Guest Archive at AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMaria Radio.net. To listen to this or any other edition of Cresta in the Afternoon, visit the audio archives at AveMariaRadio.net. Or to order a CD of the program, call 734-930-4506 or email orders at AveMariaRadio.net. That's 734-930-4506 or orders at AveMariaRadio.net.